Hey, Candace.
Candace?
Hey, Marcy. How you doing?
Good. How you doing?
Oh, I'm all right. How about yourselves?
Just ducky, thank you.
Actually, Candace, I have a paper I'd like you to review before it goes public. And I want you to read it as kind of like just a neutral person.
Okay.
In time to do that?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
And I still want to connect with you, and just catch up. So
Yeah,
I want to get on your schedule in the next 3 or 4 days.
the weekends are really good.
Oh, okay. Let's put something up on Saturday or Sunday.
Yeah, maybe after the call on Saturday or Sunday, we can do that.
Okay. All right. I'm in.
I think we need to do the same thing, Candace.
Yeah. Okay, Marcy. I would love that.
Me too.
Maybe we should do it together.
It could be a three-way.
I love that.
Yeah,
I
let's
wasn't
do
gonna encroach, but like.
I know, right? It's like a little.
Okay, what? I'll send the invite. What about let me just see. What about Sunday at 4:15?
Yeah, let's. I'm in. What about you, Marcy?
7:15.
Yes.
Yep, that works.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yes, I live on the other side of the world.
I know. I do love DC though.
I remember DC. I remember.
I remember it too, fondly. Will
Yeah.
we ever see it again?
Right?
Oh man, I know. Are we all going to travel again?
Yeah, no kidding. I am I'm 25 miles northwest, and yeah, I don't know.
Oh, you're 25 north, oh, miles northwest of DC. Oh, okay. What? Are you in Virginia?
Maryland.
Maryland. Oh, are you by Baltimore?
No, I'm sort of I'm Baltimore is northeast of
Oh,
DC,
okay.
and I'm sort of equidistant northwest.
Let me
So
know. Check in. Lake, are you there? Who's Lake?
hold on, let me get my face on here. I'm trying to catch up on paperwork. We're getting ready to go back and okay, there we are. Good morning.
Are you the Megan today, or are we waiting on Megan?
Am I had it on my calendar. I clicked it. It's one of five I have today. I'm just here. I don't know what's happening.
Okay, never mind. But
I'm looking by my calendar now.
I noticed we're being recorded, so
I noticed that when I tried to log on. I was like, oh, I'm being recorded. I'm not the host.
Well, I'm not either, so I don't
Am
even.
I? No.
I think we need to stop the recording because this is now moving
Not.
archive. Let's see,
Yeah, it's
I
the
can't do
most.
it, so.
No, I'm with Disability Services and Legal Center in Santa Rosa, California.
Oh.
So, yep, we're starting to kind of tiptoe about going back into the office and how are we going to do that? So we're trying to do this like working from home and which has been really good, but there's that element of consumer who doesn't have access to internet. They don't, so that's what I'm really trying to make sure I have a lot of, I set that up, how we deal with that going back into the office.
That is the million-dollar question of the week and the month and the season, and I think we're going to have to do a lot of discussion about the blended workforce. Like some of us are used to working remotely as a, for decades, but we're also used to seeing person, traveling and others, like in an independent living center, you're going to be people who could only work remotely, people who can, come and go, and people who can are happy to be on site every day. So it's mm-hmm. going to be a whole different way of working together, I think.
I think it's great. I didn't realize how much more efficient I would be working from home. There's no distractions. I'm the program director, so it's like they can email me if they have it, but I'm not getting just that kind of, oh, hey, da, 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 you know, so it's like I'm just being focused. But I notice a lot, some other staff just cannot focus at home. You know, they're having more of a hard time. Yeah. So,
yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting. You know,
I've been working remotely since 2002, mm-hmm. and I frankly love it.
I am loving it too. I know it's like, oh, do we have to go back?
You have a lot of responsibility for other people. You know, if you're the boss or, you know, in a mm-hmm. senior role, not that you don't, you know, want to spend time with folks, but you could spend all day very easily just like, you know, one person, another person, and everybody sort of, you know, poking their head around the
yep.
door mm-hmm. and, you know, the sort of, are you busy? Do you have a minute?
Well, right. And I always say yes.
Like, you know what I call that? The open door policy out of control.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, let's see, what time is it? It's 10:34. So we look like we have a really cool informal group today. So
yeah. Isn't this usually like huge?
You know, it varies from it really varies a lot depending on all kinds of things. So anyway, let me do my obligatory introduction and what we're going to do, and we'll probably have others join us as well. So, but before I do that, let's just go around the Zoom piles and introduce ourselves. Marcy, I'll introduce you in a minute, so let's skip you. I'm June Kales, and I'm here in Los Angeles, and I have a jacket on because every window in the house is open because it's been so warm, but there's a breeze right now, so I just don't want to close the windows because I know in another half hour I'll be sweating. So that's why it looks like it's the middle of winter. I'm the convener of these topic calls for the Disaster Coalition, and that's who I am. So, Candace?
Hey, Candace Cable. I am in Los Angeles, and I am a paraplegic. I use a wheelchair for mobility, and I was a Paralympian for 27 years and became an advocate through that and started to advocate for myself and people with disabilities on a variety of topics on disability rights, but more probably focused on human rights, and have been involved with a lot of different activities. Like here in Los Angeles, was a part of the bid to bring the Olympic and Paralympic Games here in 2028, and have worked with the Independent Living Center during this pandemic called the Southern California Resource Services, and help them get some of their food distribution together. So I'm a little bit of a jack of all trades in different areas and learning about public health and all of the different aspects of emergency management and response from these goddesses here through the Partnership for Inclusive Disaster Strategy calls that I've been on since March 16th. So looking for a new way to fit in, being able to support opportunities for inclusion.
Thanks, Candace. And yeah. Lake, you're in.
So my name's Lake. I am the program director at Disability Services and Legal Center up here in Santa Rosa, California. And yeah, it's been pretty hot the last couple days. I'm also a wheelchair user, a paraplegic. I've been in the chair about 31 years now. So what's kind of interesting is that I was 15 when I was injured. I was really young, and had nothing to do with the disabled community. You know, I was a person, not a disability. And it really wasn't until about 8 years ago when I got divorced that everything just started clicking in place for me. That's when I found my disabled community. And suddenly it was just like, you know, this is what I want to be a part of. So I went from mobility, wheelchair basketball to mobility van manager to over here at DSLC. So I'm just love being involved in the community and educating the greater community as much as possible. So I'm just happy to be here. I'm always looking for new information. Like I said, when I first came on, I'm getting ready to put together some protocol for going back to work and cleaning and how do we do all that? No more orientations. How do we reach the broader spectrum? Not everyone has Zoom. How do we help those folks? So just looking for resources and information. Thank you.
Thanks, Blake. Wendy? And you'll have to unmute.
Yeah, sorry, it took me a minute to unmute. My name's Wendy Longwell. I'm the manager of Disability Action Center up in Redding, California. And we are also very hot the last couple of days. So trying to keep cool and work with people during this new normal of having COVID and the depression that it's bringing because people are so isolated.
Okay, thank you. Let's see, Brian, do you want to introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Brian from Freed Center for Independent Living in Grass Valley. I was Freed's Disability Community Advocate, and now I am Freed's Emergency Preparedness Coordinator, and I just started last Monday. So, got a lot of work to do.
Well, congratulations, Brian.
Awesome.
Thank you very much.
I hope we can do more of your radio shows on this topic. So.
Absolutely, absolutely. And thank you. It's an honor to be here and to do this work.
And Todd, we don't have to wear a mask today because we're physical distancing via Zoom, but my intro yourself.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, but trust me, you definitely want to see me with a mask today. I apologize for being late. Our staff had a million questions and drug a little bit long. I was so happy to see that you pulled this together. I think that going forward, what we learn from other countries, what I've learned just talking to Marcy about the things that she's introduced me to, has completely changed my mind in how IL works and what the opportunities are, what we can learn from others, and what they can learn from us.
And Todd, you're up in where?
I'm sorry, I'm in Seattle, Washington. And I work with a subcommittee on emergency planning with the National Council on Independent Living, as well as work for a Center for Independent Living up here in Lakewood.
Great. Thanks, Todd. And Deidre, we're just doing real quick intros because we've got a small, intimate group. So want to just say where you're from, who you are? Well, not yet. Come back to you then. Okay. So today we are exploring the international space. You know, what can we learn from our peers and our colleagues in the pursuit of justice and equality and kind of reframing and rebalancing disability inclusion in disaster planning and preparedness and response and recovery and mitigation. So today, Marcy Roth, who's the executive director and chief executive officer of the World Institute on Disability, WID for short, is going to be our discussion Tigger offered. And Mercy is a kind of, she's a seasoned disability rights champion, I'd say. She's been active in independent living since 1982, kind of the dark ages, the cave era, but I was with her, so I can't.
You cast too many aspersions.
Exactly. She's had a lot of leadership roles nationally and globally, disability advocacy and public policy organizations since 1995. She's established and supported and led coalitions committed to really making real and getting disability inclusion right, both on the state side and internationally. For a global inclusion and focus on disasters. Marcy was also at FEMA from 2009 to 2017, 8 years. And she was appointed by Obama to the Department of Homeland Security at FEMA. FEMA is the Federal Emergency Management Agency. And she was the senior advisor to the administrator at the time, that was Craig Hugate. And she directed the Office of Disability Integration and Coordination. And after that, she launched the Partnership for Inclusive Disaster Strategies. So Marcy's a colleague, a friend, someone I love to debate with, and she's a patient mentor for many people, and she's tireless, and she also doesn't need a whole lot of sleep, and she's a great multitasker, very jealous of all those skills. Marcy's favorite sound bites include things like, "Let's just not admire the problem," and "Never give up," and "Never give in," and many more. So Mercy, she's based in DC, and over to you to kind of kick off the discussion here.
Well, thank you very much, June. That was a sort of a fun opportunity to hear some of how you would describe me, since we've been besties for about 1,000 years, and yeah, so. I mean, you could have gone anywhere with that. thank you for calling me a patient mentor. Truth be told, June is really the mentor. I am just a little more patient in my process. But as I think we all know, you know, June is the mother of disasters, and we are never happier than when we're looking at the best TV shows, books, movies, because we are both from the cut from the cloth of born to be doing disasters. And I'm guessing that some of the rest of you, many of whom I have the great pleasure of being with on an almost daily basis these days. I'm guessing that you too have the disaster gene. So I am going to lead us on a discussion about the international and global disability and disaster picture, and I'll give you some context to sort of set the stage for the discussion, to just sort of help us all understand how we got to where we are right now. For me, I've been working dabbling in the international disability and disaster space since the Iraq War and then the Indian Ocean tsunami, some big earthquakes in Eastern Europe and a couple of places. In along the way, the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities was, becoming a treaty open to signatories. As I think most of you know, the treaty is an international human rights treaty of the United Nations, it was first opened in 2006. It was in fact the first human rights treaty of the 21st century, which is always a fascinating tidbit. It was really a major catalyst in the global efforts to move from, seeing people with disabilities as objects of charity, the medical model and protection as standards to equal members of society with human rights. Among all of the human rights instruments, it's the only one that explicitly focuses on sustainable development, which is an important element I'll talk a little bit more about later on. But as I think you all probably know, but I will just to get us all on the same page, the U.S. didn't actually sign the convention until 2009. And we are today one of the few member states of the United Nations that has still not ratified. We could have a whole separate discussion on that one, but we won't go there. One of the most notable elements, particularly for the discussion that we're having today, in the CRPD was Article 11. And Article 11 is actually have, there we go. So Article 11 has really not been very adequately focused on. But Article 11 is situations of risk and humanitarian emergencies. And 14 years after the treaty was introduced, we have sort of our first ever document, guidance on reporting for Article 11. The guidance, the intention is to provide people with disabilities, organizations of people with disabilities, also referred to as OPDs, which is a change from the previous use of the term disabled persons organizations, DPOs, neither of which do we use here in the US. We typically refer to disability-led organizations, but Article 11 guidance is intended to provide disability organizations, people with disabilities, and social society organizations with practical support to analyze and report on the implementation of Article 11. It also focuses on some of the legal frameworks that apply, which are especially valuable for us because they focus on tools that we might consider adding to our toolkit. So the CRPD 2006 and the process by which CRPD was gathering signatories and countries ratifying. Concurrent to that was a growing a global sustainable development agenda. That agenda was, in fact, adopted in 2015, and it's a very broad agenda for 2015 to 2030 that lays out a blueprint for peace and prosperity for people and the planet. It includes 17 sustainable development goals, which are calls to action, both for developing countries and developed countries in an overarching partnership. And the sustainable development goals recognize that ending poverty and other deprivations must go hand in hand with strategies that improve health and education, reduce inequality, and spur economic growth, all while tackling climate change and working to preserve our oceans and forests. So, it is really one of the very first instruments that enabled the linkages for the CRPD and disability inclusive practices that many of us have been trying to lead for many years. They finally all came together in some pretty significant ways in the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development. Along with that, concurrent to that, was the rewrite of the Hyogo framework for disaster risk reduction, which had been established as a 15-year framework for disaster risk management back in at the turn of the century. In the run-up to the update of the disaster risk reduction framework, I had the opportunity to get involved as a representative of the U.S. When I was at FEMA. So I was excited to find that in the writing of the Sendai Framework for Disaster Risk Reduction, and the reason it's called the Sendai Framework is because we all gathered in 2015 in Sendai, Japan, which was the last community before the large area of Japan that was impacted by the nuclear meltdowns that followed the catastrophic 9.2 Great East Japan earthquake in 2011 that then caused a catastrophic tsunami followed by a nuclear meltdown in Fukushima. The Sendai Framework for Disaster Risk Reduction is a 15-year agreement with 7 targets and 4 priorities for action, which aim to achieve the substantial reduction of disaster risk and losses in lives, livelihoods, and health, and in the economic, physical, social, cultural, and environmental assets of persons, businesses, communities, and countries. It is the first framework that was established in support of the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development. And it is a global focal point for much of the disaster-related prevention, planning, preparedness, response, recovery, mitigation, build back better, reconstruction, the whole panoply of before, during, and after disasters. Happily, as I said, there were a number of disability organizations, DPOs, OPDs, disability-led organizations, all working together in the run-up to the Sendai meeting in 2015. And we were able to insert many specific disability references, goals for inclusion, and it was a very significant turn of events for those of us focusing on disability and disaster. It was followed by the DACA declaration, which came out of a meeting further in the year in 2015 in DACA. And this was a declaration that provides a practical guideline for states to implement and report on the Sendai framework for disaster risk reduction and sustainable development goals, specifically on the inclusion of persons with disabilities. So it took the Sendai framework, which is this huge, massive disaster risk reduction, sustainable goals slice, and then the DACA declaration brought it all together with a focus on the inclusion of persons with disabilities. The charter on inclusion of persons with disabilities in humanitarian action was then developed in advance of the World Humanitarian Summit, which occurred in May of 2016. And that was attended by stakeholders from states, UN agencies, international civil society, community, and global, regional, and national organizations of persons with disabilities. The charter.
Marcy, just back up for one. DACA. DACA is a place?
DACA is a place.
Where is DACA?
DACA is in Bangladesh.
Okay. Thank you.
Is DACA in Bangladesh? I'm saying that and then I'm like, wait a minute. Hang on a second. Yes, it is the capital of Bangladesh. Just wanted to be sure. Shall I stop and see if anybody else has any questions before I keep going?
You know, Junior, I think it's because it's so informal that we can, do you mind if we interrupt you from
time? Not at all.
Okay. Good. Well, given that said, you all have permission to stop Marcy at any time. So, and Marcy, I'll just interject them. you know, I'm listening to you, so the terminology is so different than the terminology we use. So as you go along, if you want to translate any of that into how we say it, that would be good too, because it sounds very impressive, but sometimes not quite clear what it means exactly.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because I've had the opportunity to write a number of documents over the last couple of years for UN agencies and for a non-US audience. And I have noticed how much it's changed. I can, you know, even though I'm speaking English, I slip back and forth very easily from the English that is a non-English audience and the English that is a U.S. audience. There's a huge difference. It is offensive to refer to people with disabilities in some audiences. They much prefer persons with disabilities. I've always thought persons with disabilities is just weird. And as you can tell by the OPD and DPO discussions, you know, disabled persons organizations of persons with disabilities, you know, everybody is struggling with the identity first versus person first.
I'm sorry, Marcia, so they don't like persons, but person is okay?
No, they don't like people.
People. So can you help me? I've never heard of that.
Sure. Yeah, it was a bit of a surprise to me too. Okay. So for instance, the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities is how we refer to the convention. We here in the U.S. would generally not opt for referring to persons. We're talking about more than one. And yet the formal phrase is persons with disabilities. The DACA Declaration focuses on the inclusion of persons with disabilities.
Interesting.
Charter on inclusion of persons with disabilities in humanitarian action. You know, another example.
Right. Thank you. Yeah, I'd not heard of that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So
you're our English translator, Marcy.
Yeah, go figure. One of the things that I just very recently was thinking about how unfair it is, but how grateful I am that the one language that everybody has agreed is the, you know, shared language of all of this international work is English. Because if it was any language other than English, I would be excluded. And there's no pride in sharing my monolingual status. It's actually pretty horrifying. And so, moving on.
This is Candace, and I just want to throw another fly in the ointment with the persons with disabilities and the CRPD and then people with disabilities of the ADA, is that in the United States, we also have another disabled people or disabled person, exactly. Right? So, and that's beginning to catch on internationally. Uh-huh. Because you hear it in some of the different countries that have long-standing disabled persons organizations. So yeah, you said that really well about that identity piece, Marcy, that we're still evolving. We're a very young movement, if we think about it. We've only come out since the mid-20th century.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. We are a very young movement. And yeah, thanks for saying that, Candace. And you know, for some of us who fought so fiercely for, you know, to not be seen as, well, you know, see me as a person, you know, include me as a person. I am not first and foremost a person with a disability. We fought so hard for that, that in the beginning of the sort of, you know, shift in, you know, power ownership words, it was like, no, we worked so hard to make that go away. And then you get into an international audience and yeah. So anyway, so the Sendai framework and the DACA declaration were then followed by the Charter on Inclusion of Persons with Disabilities in Humanitarian Action. And that all happened in 2016, which then launched a multi-year process that led to an interagency standing committee of the UN, which charged several organizations to work together to develop guidelines on the inclusion of persons with disabilities in humanitarian action. The guidelines were just approved and launched in December of 2019. And the guidelines are not intended to be for disability organizations. They are specifically intended to provide guidance to what I often refer to as the humanitarian industrial complex. You know, all those major organizations that are the disaster response, humanitarian relief, big shots. You know, some of them are Red Cross and Save the Children and CARE. And, you know, I could go on, long list, but these are the big players and also the ones that garner most of the funding during and immediately following disasters. So
so the humanitarian action, is that something also that UNICEF does and other organizations like that?
So great question. So UNICEF is, you know, one of the UN agencies. And all of the UN agencies, because of the Interagency Standing Committee, contributed to the development of these guidelines. But as it happens, UNICEF, so there was a leadership group of three organizations charged with developing or leading the development of the humanitarian action guidelines. And those three are the International Disability Alliance, IDA, which is a global organization of OPDs, Organizations of Persons with Disabilities. The UNICEF represented the UN system, and Handicap International, which is now called Humanity and Inclusion, was the third entity representing a humanitarian organization that is not run by people with disabilities. So HI, which sort of goes by two names, the new one is Humanity and Inclusion, because everybody hated Handicap International, but they still haven't quite let go of the previous name. they represented the humanitarian NGO, civil society organization. So those three entities drove the multi-year process. And again, the intention of these guidelines are to help everybody else to understand how to engage us. And you will often hear talk about a twin track approach. We borrowed very heavily. I participated in the drafting of the guidelines, and we focused pretty heavily on the notion of a twin track, something that we really don't talk about a lot here in the U.S. And I think it's something we would really benefit from focusing a little more on in disasters. And twin track is really focusing on both inclusion and specific direct disability supports and services. And that in order to be successful, especially in the exigent circumstances of a disaster, you need to really be doing both. And we do that. We just don't own that we're taking a twin track. And we often get stuck then in this sort of like funny place in between. We want it to be integrated. We don't want something separate and special, except when we sort of do, because when it's not separate and special, they get it wrong. So we need to both be focusing very specifically on accessibility, equal access, full inclusion, and we need to be showing up at those much bigger tables and making sure that the larger audience isn't forgetting us, that they know how to include us, that they're doing it appropriately, that we are included every step of the way, et cetera. That the guidelines were also a very significant contribution from the humanitarian sector to the development and launch of the United Nations Disability Inclusion Strategy, which was launched last June, just about a year ago. And the UN Disability Inclusion Strategy is, it has both a policy and an accountability framework with specific benchmarks to assess progress and accelerate change internally for the United Nations. And it's very similar to the UN System-Wide Action Plan on Gender Equality and the Empowerment of Women.
So the guidelines, the guidance, and the inclusionary strategy with benchmarks, we then hear more about the benchmarks, but the guidance, if we were to read it right now, the seven of us, would there be any surprises, or is it like motherhood and apple pie?
You're talking about the humanitarian action guidance or the UN disability inclusion strategy?
I think I'm talking about both, since I haven't read either.
Okay. So the humanitarian action guidance does a really deep dive into a lot of important topics. There's a whole section on WASH, which is the water and hygiene issues in disasters. There's a whole section on violence against women. It does a very deep dive into the specific rights, opportunities, dangers that humanitarian actors need to understand, need to plan for, need to address in circumstances of not only disasters, but conflict and, oh, by the way, public health emergencies. And the UN Disability Inclusion Strategy, also fondly referred to as the UNDISC, is internal to the UN's efforts to transform what they're doing internally to drive inclusion throughout all of their external work. So in terms of benchmarks, and I'm glad you asked that, June, I've had the really fun opportunity to be doing work with the UN Office for Disaster Risk Reduction, UNDRR, on their internal assessment. They just completed their first review last week. And so taking them through that process has been, it's been a lot of fun. It's a little painful for them because they thought they were farther along than they are. And in particular, there are four core areas in which they are assessing their own disability inclusion process. And so those four core areas, the first one is leadership, strategic planning and management. The second one is inclusiveness. The third one is programming. And the fourth one is organizational culture. Now, within those four core areas, there are 15 indicators that they're being measured against. And those indicators are sort of broken up among those four core areas. So leadership, strategic planning, and management is the overarching for the indicators around leadership, strategic planning, disability-specific policy and strategy, and institutional setup. Under inclusiveness, it includes consultation with persons with disabilities, accessibility, conferences and events, reasonable accommodation, and procurement. Under programming,
hey, Marcy, is there a link we could follow along on that one?
Yes, and it's that the document that I sent you, all of this is in that document.
Oh, okay. I'm not sure I saw that. All right.
Oh, okay. I sent it to you a couple of days ago. Hmm.
Okay.
And it's for everybody.
I'll post it. I'll take a look. Yeah.
So, and I'm happy to sort of run through this again at some point. I mean, this is so much information, but in order to understand first and foremost how much we're missing out on, and second of all, how much other folks are doing, you know, I thought it was important to give you all that background to understand that, you know, there's a lot going on, and it's it is surprisingly coherent. In a world where coherence seems to no longer matter, there's actually.
So I have a question. Who? So in the review, so the accountability. Mm-hmm. Is there a group that you're a part of, or you know that are holding that in just the UN talk right now? You know, their internal review of themselves and where they're and then what actions they're going to take. Is there an accountability group? Or I know with the CRPD, that was one of the biggest issues with all the countries, was how are you going to hold them accountable to all these things? I mean, the committee that is elected is supposed to be doing quite a bit of that, but really it has to be within the country, right? And it has to be the DPOs and things like that do that.
Right.
So with that internal UN piece, which is pretty embedded the way they did things in the past, mm-hmm. right? What is that?
So I can give you a very intimate example, because I was just working on this 12 hours ago. So let's go to, I'm just gonna pick a random indicator. Let's see, what did I pick? I picked, evaluation. So under evaluation, the measures are evaluation guidelines contain guidance on how to address disability inclusion. To meet the requirements, evaluation guidelines contain guidance on how to address disability inclusion, and disability inclusion is mainstreamed effectively throughout the evaluation process and reflected in the terms of reference, inception, and evaluation reports. To exceed the requirements, you would have to do both of those and a meta-analysis of evaluation findings, conclusions and recommendations relating to disability inclusion, which would be performed at least every 5 years. In reporting, you would have to provide a justification for the rating, and the ratings would be not applicable, missed, approaches, meets, and exceeds. So you would have to provide explanation for each of the components, including actions taken and data sources. Please include information and examples from both headquarters and the field. The next one, supporting documentation. Please provide Word, PowerPoint, Excel, PDF, images, and links where relevant. Document should be blah, blah, blah. Next one is actions planned and timeline to maintain and enhance progress. And so you would need to provide the specific actions and when they will be delivered. which unit is responsible for implementation, and then any additional information about opportunities and challenges in implementing the indicator, main reasons why you have been able to make progress, or main factors that have stalled progress. And then there's a technical guide that, so for this category under evaluation, the technical guide, let's see, let's go to 10.
So Marcy, I feel like this sounds, I feel like I've got a fire hose coming at me.
I'm sure.
But I think, from what you said, and I sent you all the document, by the way, I sent it out on that disaster list just now. It sounds like there are many elements that we could incorporate into our hot washes.
Absolutely right.
To the way that we evaluate in a informal way how we're doing.
Absolutely right.
In the after action reports that we write versus the one that government writes, which are very
developed
and homogenized, versus ours, which are very much in your face and got it wrong and got it right. It sounds great, actually. But so the overarching question I have is, who's the arbiter? Who's the grader? Who's the accrediting body? Who says yay or nay? Who says yes or good job?
There is a new unit at the UN called the UN Disability Inclusion Strategy Office. They report directly to the Secretary General. And one of the obligations, one of the indicators is, consultation.